Well, as I just said, this is the first in a series of sermons on gratitude as part of our season, a time when we are to be more mindful of all the ways God comes to us, including those who around us who bless us in manners large and small. And we're beginning with gratitude for creation. Now, there's a method to my madness here, for we are often reluctant to be thankful or give praise for others or and what they do or for who they are. Well, to be honest, we sometimes think, well, what about everything I do? Who notices me? Or our gratitude for the good things that come to us is slow because we think, well, I worked hard for this. I deserve it. But who can look at those mountains and say, I could do better? Who can walk through our rose garden when it's in full bloom and say, I could do that? Who can watch the New Mexico sunset from both the west and the east and say, no big deal? No, when it comes to the good creation that we call Earth, we can take no credit for any part of it. So as we begin to exercise our gratitude muscles in these coming weeks, this is a good place for us to start with something for which we can take no credit. This writer of Psalm 104 gives our first clue of where to begin, being aware. Now that might sound either stupid or obvious, but how often do we miss some things because they're always there and have just become routine for us? The psalmist notices everything, from the winds and the clouds to all the places water can be found, to grass underfoot, to rocks and birds, and even day and night. From the most routine to those things we are more apt to notice because they might be a little unusual, very little seems to miss the psalmist's gaze. Like the creation narrative in Genesis, this is not a hymn that's based in biology, nor botany, nor entomology, or any life science. It is a song more about who than how. It is lifting up the Creator as one who not only brought all this into being, but dwells in the midst of it, who is wrapped up in it as a piece of clothing, who is glorified by every star and every wave that hits the shore. There is no part of the created order where God is not present. The psalmist also acknowledges the creative power of God, from bringing order to the chaos of the waters to making the wind a divine messenger. God's power is not only one that creates, but brings order to the whole. What surrounds us is not just for our appreciation of beauty or majesty. It's been created with a purpose. The psalmist tells us that it's brought into being to be part of an interconnected and interdependent system, although he does it in a beautifully poetic way. The springs of water that come forth are to quench the thirst of wild animals. The trees by the streams provide homes for the birds. Grass is there for cattle to eat, and the earth is for us to till and plant and grow food. Everything has a place where it is connected, where it is needed, where it has a purpose, not just for us, but for all the earth and its inhabitants. Sometimes, in the midst of our giving thanks for the wonderful world around us, we only mention how all of this affects us, how it supports us, not the other creatures who also call the earth home. And yet, all of them, ecosystems and the plants and the creatures that are part of them, are essential parts of God's good creation and deserving of our gratitude. And who holds this all together? These systems that work in harmony for the well-being of all? Well, it's the one who dwells in the midst of it all, whose tent is the heavens, the creator of all. Psalm 136, which we read as a responsive reading, reminds us what underlies the heavens, the sea, the sun, and the moon. And if you don't know, it's because you weren't paying attention, because we kept saying it over and over, and that's the steadfast love of the Lord. That it all was created in love, for love. Now, hopefully, none of this is really news to you, but rather a word to remind us to open our eyes and our ears and all our senses to notice what is around us and to notice it as much as we can. A world not of our making, but a world that has been given to us as a precious gift and placed in our care. In some ways, the psalmist is one of our first naturalists because they understood the power of wind and wave, of earthquake and fire, and also because they knew how dependent each part of the world was on the other parts, including us, which is why in the Hebrew, the word for humanity and the word for soil come from the same root, because we are the are of the earth. We are part of it. We belong to it as part of God's good creation. So how do we show gratitude for all that surrounds us? Whether the mountains that look down on us each day, or the waves that hit a Gulf shore, or the forests, or the fertile ground that continues to produce food for us, what is an appropriate thank you to God? Besides our songs and prayers, as I asked the kids, how does one even begin in the face of the power and glory that surrounds us to act in gratitude? Well, so often we talk about care for the earth, and when we do, it's often out of a fear-based thing, this doomsday thing. Climate change, the amount of pollution, and ways we're bringing extinction to species of creatures that are part of complex ecosystems. And I'm not getting into any of that, because then it becomes a political, economic issue, and that's not where I want to go today. If you want to have a debate about that, we can do that another time. But what, just think for me, with me for a minute, what if what motivated us to care for the earth wasn't fear, but gratitude? Not dread, but love for the Creator. What if we cared for the earth, protected the intricacies of ecosystems because it was such a precious gift with which we have been entrusted, that we didn't earn and that we do not deserve? What if we protected the air and water, not from a sense of fear or desperation that pretty soon we won't have any way to breathe or any way to drink anything safe, because then that's still all about us, but from a deep felt love for God and a desire to give thanks for all that is around us. Because we know what a difference what motivates us can make in outcomes. When we're motivated by fear, we're not nearly as creative or as risk-taking or as persistent as when we are acting from a stance of loving and being loved. Fear and desperation call us to knee-jerk reactions or analysis paralysis, not thoughtful and caring responses, not cooperative work, certainly. There's a story of a man who lives on an island off the coast of India, and there was a documentary about him, a short documentary, and over the years, part of his island was decimated by developers who deforested a good part of the island, and then they left. And for the past 37 years, this man would go out to this area every day and plant a tree. 37 years, every day. I don't think I've done anything every day for 37 years, except wake up. This started with him planting bamboo shoots, but over the years and all his tree planting, he has managed to begin to reforest the area, because this is a tropical climate where things grow faster. And the wildlife has begun to return. He did it because he loves the island. He did it because he wanted the birds and the animals, even the snakes, which is what motivated him when he found a whole shore full of dead snakes. He even wanted them to have a home. He earned the name the Forest Man of India. Now, I know all of you can call to mind places whose beauty is breathtaking, places that inspire you, touch your heart, that bring you peace, places that you love. What is that place for you? It doesn't have to have the majesty of a mountain range or the seemingly infinite size of an ocean. It can be sunflowers that peek over the brick wall, or a hummingbird that's taking a drink at your feeder. It can be your backyard garden. Take a moment to bring that place into your mind. And what do these places give to you? And how do we then give thanks for those priceless gifts? What if we showed our gratitude to God by caring for the earth as a precious gift? Would we be able to find better approaches, more cooperative solutions to how we impact the world in negative ways? Would we be more mindful of our own actions as individuals if they were seen not as what we do to or for the earth, but what we do to or for God? What if part of our showing love to God was showing love for the well-being of God's whole creation? The forest man of India has shown us what even one person can do when it's done in love. When we are mindful, really mindful of all that God has given us in this gift we call earth, the blessing of seasons, the diversity of creatures, the beauty that surrounds us in both small and large ways, how can we not be grateful enough to want it to remain this way, to do everything we can to care for it? May we continue to be conscious of this amazing gift of love from our Creator and show our thanks and love in how we care for it. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, for He is good, for His steadfast love endures forever. Amen.